please rise. Court is now in session. Please be seated.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Your Honor. May it please this honorable court, good day. My name is Stephen Dryden. I represent the interests of Fantasia and the Louis in this appeal. I also had the opportunity approximately 21 years ago to be involved in the Amico versus Newcastle County case. That case, there are two published opinions, one relative to the unconstitutionality of a 500-foot residential restriction, which is virtually identical to the restriction that is currently on the books in 24 Del C, Section 1610C today, and a second determination that related to the 2,800-foot church school spacing requirement. The district court in those regards, Judge Wright, did not grant summary judgment as to that latter issue, but it did have a trial relative to those issues that went before a jury. It happened to be my first jury trial, and I represented Newcastle County in those regards in that case. Two of the principal exhibits, if not the only principal exhibits before the court that day, were a map of Newcastle County showing over 30 technically available sites for adult entertainment in Newcastle County, and a second map, far more important, showing that there were actually 9 sites back in 1984 that you could actually put one in without any impediment.
Is all of this in the record in our current case?
It's part of the Amico case, Your Honor, as far as, but I'm basically using it as a underlying basis to our principal argument here today. Before, what we have here is a circumstance far different than what existed back in 1984.
Remind me of the site to Amico. What's the site to that case?
I don't know it off the top of my head. I know it's 101 F sub something or the other. I'm sorry, I don't have it.
Is it in your brief?
They are in the briefs, yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
What we have here is a situation wherein the state, not at the time the arrests were set forth, but sometimes subsequent during litigation, has identified, after 3 attempts through Newcastle County employees Susie and Vieri, 12 technically available sites for the placement of adult entertainment in Newcastle County. That's the first step.
I like this phrase, technically available. What does that mean?
It means that under the phraseology of the statutes as currently set forth, that they meet the technical requirements, not that they're actually available for the placement of an adult entertainment establishment, such as the fact, and why I look at, and I use the term actually available, is very doubtful, let's put it that way, that if you have a site that contains state police barracks, that's going to be turned over and made available for adult entertainment establishments, that the Christiana Mall maintenance facility is going to somehow all of a sudden become available for an adult entertainment establishment.
Well, I just wanted to get clear in my mind, the use of the word technical isn't a pejorative term. It's a term of art in this area of the law.
It is a term of art in this area of the law as set forth, yes, Your Honor. And as part of our original argument that we set forth before the panel, we again, and part of the supplemental briefing was relative to the specific issues and the differentials between technical availability and actual availability in reality. And the real problem here, as it exists today in Newcastle County, there's precisely 0 adult entertainment establishments that aren't grandfathered in that are in existence. 0.
Did you parse these two different meanings of the word available in the Superior Court?
Yes, Your Honor.
And
we actually had affidavits that we submitted by James Lober for the Superior Court referencing specifically this fact that once you take a look at all of the real particularities, such as the existence of a state police barracks a car dealership, a VFW site, the parking lot of Naaman's Liquors, the only parking lot they have, but we can put an adult entertainment center there. When you take a look at it, there's a reason why in Newcastle County the number is zero.
I'm having some trouble with this because you are not contending, are you, that there have to be 12 or 10 or 20, whatever number, of beautifully set up vacant pieces of land with, you know, a nice building on them that, or without a building, but, you know, just waiting for you to buy.
You're right.
So if you're not contending that, then who cares whether the Delaware State Police happen to own one of the parcels that is a technically available parcel if you want to put in an adult entertainment establishment there and you're willing to pay enough money? Arguably, the Delaware State Police will say, we'll relocate to somewhere else because we're doing so handsomely on this sale. And wouldn't that be the same thing for the liquor store with the adjoining parking lot? That, yeah, you're right. I don't see how a liquor store would sell off its only parking area and continue as a liquor store. But maybe the liquor store owner would want to sell both the store and the parking lot, and then you've got what you need. Where's the problem with that in terms of the analysis of availability?
Well, the problem is basically it's set forth in Young versus American Mini Theaters that you can't use the power to zone or the power of the state as a subterfuge to eliminate the right. And it's not just eliminate, but it's greatly restrict access to. And that no one else is basically in a circumstance where they're limited to a very few number of positions as far as where you could possibly go. But there's no place under a realistic realistic circumstance that you can actually put one without having to, overpay? You have to exercise the First Amendment right in the first state under interstitial approach. You have to be treated worse than everyone else. You have to actually overpay ridiculously to try to get the exercise of the right. That's not what this state's about, or it shouldn't be.
How do we decide whether it's overpayment? Do we have to see how much profit would be made at that site?
The point is that there really shouldn't be such mountains to climb. We shouldn't have to have my client try to figure out where you can put one in the first place. There wasn't this list in existence at the front end saying, well, there's 12 available sites that we think that there you could put one, go find it. We had to get into litigation before all of a sudden this list, after three attempts from county personnel, appears.
Tell me what your concession, or tell us what your concession was. The state's referring you made a concession as to 12 sites.
Yes, there are 12 technically available sites.
Well, why do you use the word technically?
Because if you take a look at the statute, they meet all the technical terms. They're technically available.
By technically, you mean there are 12 sites that comply with the statute.
Right. In all of Newcastle County, which is 8/10,000 of a percentage of totally available land in Newcastle County, that's what's available in Newcastle County. And unfortunately, when you look at the 12, you get back to the number zero because there's none of them available, unlike Amico back in 1984. We're not looking at the problems of having to build a building or put a road in or anything like that. They're just used up.
Mr. Dryden.
Yes, Sean.
When your client initially entered or set up its adult entertainment business in the site and where it is now.
The sexually oriented business, yes, Sean.
Yes. Was that site within or without the 2,800 feet requirement? That is, was there a church within 2,800 feet of that site at the time?
Initially, it was thought there wasn't. Then there turned out to be there was, and then that turned out that church wasn't in existence anymore. And then they did further search, and they found in the middle of an industrialist
section. Yes.
Yes, you're right.
And so, in those circumstances, assuming that your client had known that and was then cited by the regulatory authorities for not for violating that requirement, would now be arguing, oh, gee, you know, we're now in violation, and we're going to be denied a license, but we can't be denied a license because there are 14, you know, technically available sites, but they're not affordable. It would be too difficult. You can't do that to us. Is that an argument do you think we should be entertaining or any court should be entertaining?
That's not my argument, Your Honor. It has nothing to do with affordability or the like. It's basically a matter of this is a First Amendment right. The citizenry of the state should not be required to jump over hurdles to try to figure out, one, where a site might exist, because that list of 12 didn't exist until after litigation commenced.
Well, Mr. Dryden, what we're talking about is government restraint, correct? Whether it's proper or improper under the Constitution?
Yes, under the Delaware and federal Constitution. Yes,
well, yeah, let's go there. The next step is there is federal case law that suggests that issues of impracticality are not government-imposed restraints, and therefore they do not run afoul of the federal Constitution. And there's a suggestion in your submission to us that this may be a circumstance under which the Delaware Constitution would be more restrictive on government action than the federal Constitution, but I have not been able, perhaps it's my own lack of ability, but I have not been able to articulate from your brief what it is you would ask us to do, if anything, under the state Constitution that would be more, depending on your perspective, would more narrowly construe or more broadly protect the First Amendment right.
Well, again, what we're attempting to have this court do is to follow the lead of the Arcara Court in New York to note that the Delaware Constitution is going to be viewed in a broader and a more protective right for the citizenry as far as in these regards, and to note those areas of the statute that are improper or that are unconstitutional to strike them down per se. And our argument is not limited merely to the issues as to the availability. We also have set forth in the improper standards used by the lower court, vagueness analysis and the like as far as which we're asking the court to entertain as well.
Well, how would you articulate the Delaware rule of law that would be similar to that of the Arcara Court from our constitutionalist language?
Well, I don't think that this court should allow, and I know Huddleston's comments on prior restraints, but I don't think this court should allow the Delaware Constitution to be used as a prior restraint and to basically eliminate this right, because that's what you can, we can call it anything we want to.
Well, the Constitution wouldn't be used to permit a prior restraint. The Constitution would be used to prohibit it. So how would we articulate a holding in your case that would achieve what you're asking us to do today?
Well, basically, you have a prohibition of an unpopular view, at least by the government, as far as the legislature. And what they've done over the years, since 1984, by adding all of the different hoops that now are there, the extension of the line-to-line requirement as opposed to building-to-line requirement, the passage of 1610C, putting back an unconstitutional residential restriction, the income tax aspect that's been drafted into Section 1617, all of these steps, 1,500 feet between uses, no use within a shopping center which has four or more buildings in it or four or more uses in it. All of these restrictions are set up to do what they've done, to bring the number down to zero. We can use the Delaware Constitution to eliminate the prior restraint of an unpopular view, or we can say it's okay not to have First Amendment rights as to these areas in Delaware, because that's what it's turned out.
I understand the options, but I'm again asking you to articulate a holding in the case that you believe would bring Delaware in line with the Arcara Court and be consistent with our case law.
Well, I believe that, all right, it's a good question. It's hard to articulate.
Well, it's the one you're asking us to answer, and I'm trying to get some help with it.
I know. Thank
you. In the New York case, the case where the adult bookstore was closed, because the patrons were engaging in criminal activity outside the store. Is that correct?
Correct.
And allegedly inspired by visits to the bookstore. And the problem was that no one had ever arrested the patrons, that the first solution was to close the bookstore.
That's correct.
So I don't see the analogy to this case.
Well, again, the circumstance herein is that there has not been a problem that's been proven. When we go back to the underlying genesis of the statute, it was created in 1977 as a bookstore statute, and they say our intent is to eliminate prostitution and obscenity, whatever that might be. And then everything that's happened since then, this monster that's grown, they all go back and look to 1977 and say, well, that's what they said back then, so it's good enough then, it's good enough now.
Well, let's go to the Delaware Constitution. It was hard for me to either find or follow your argument under the Delaware Constitution, but it appears to me that you're relying on the amendment that put speech in the Delaware Constitution that admittedly didn't exist when you started these proceedings. But in Delaware, put the word speech in, not expression. Is it significant for our purposes today that when that bill was debated, one of the sponsors in the House was asked about amending the Constitution to put in speech, and the question was, is this going to be construed to provide rights of greater expression than the First Amendment? And the answer was no. That's why we're using the word speech.
Quite frankly, again, the minimums are there. This court is to decide whether or not under the Miller analysis, whether or not Delaware, not just as it now says, but as it existed before, whether our state
practices. What's the pre-existing section of the Delaware Constitution that affords your client relief?
There's not a per se pre-existing section. I acknowledge that, Your Honor. But again, it's a situation wherein when you look at the Constitution as a whole, at the minimum, it meets the requirements of the federal Constitution. Then we go from there.
Did you happen to read our opinion in Ortiz, a death penalty case that was released in January? And we noted there that if people are going to make an argument under the Delaware Constitution, they have to articulate the argument, they have to identify the section, and they have to give us some help. You just can't say, come out differently because we have our own Constitution.
No, Your Honor, I did not have the opportunity I have not read Ortiz at this point in time, Your Honor.
Can I go back to perhaps a simpler question? There are 12 sites, right?
Yes.
Technically available sites. Let's assume that all 12 of those sites were vacant land that somebody actually wanted to sell. Would that eliminate your argument?
Yes, Your Honor.
So in other words, the number 12 by itself is not the problem. So it's not that 12 is too small a number compared to, you know, the total number of sites there are in Newcastle County. It's that those 12 that have been identified aren't up for sale. Aren't.
As the case law notes, that the site isn't available if you have to redistrict it. The site isn't available if there's an airport there. The site isn't available if there's a long-term use which isn't going to go away. That's what the case law says across the board, and that's what we have here. And that's the problem with the sites, whether it's 12 or 10,000, as far as if they're not available, they're simply not available as a matter of course. And that's the problem that we have here. You can say 12. There was 9 truly available back in 1984.
Okay, wait, stop. What do you mean 9 truly available in 1984? There were 9 parcels that were on the market to be sold?
There were 9 parcels that had no long-term impediments on them back in 1984.
Okay, wait. What do you call a long-term impediment? Because we've got a liquor store. It could be there for another year. It could be there for another 30 years. Is that a long-term impediment, the fact that there's a business establishment that's operating there?
There should be at least some availability. Yes, Your Honor, if there's been a long-term history and as set forth in the Lover affidavit looking at the various impediments that are there, yes, exactly. They weren't going anywhere, haven't gone anywhere. They're still there. It's not like they've opened up since the time that my clients were arrested. They're still an impediment. And the real question comes down to whether or not we want to, you know, put a blinder on and say it's okay to not have the right in Newcastle County, Delaware, or we want to say enough's enough. And that's really where the problem comes down to, because it's being used as a subterfuge. They made the act so difficult that you can't have a sexually oriented business in Newcastle County. It's an impossibility. If that's okay, that's fine, if that's what this court wants to say. But that's not what the First Amendment or the Delaware Constitution should be about.
Did you want to save your last 5 minutes for rebuttal?
Yes, thank you.
Good afternoon. May it please the court. My name is Kim Avazian, and I'm representing the state in this matter. The only impediment facing the appellants in this case is the restriction of 2,800 feet. It's not the requirement regarding income tax or the 500-foot residential limit or any of the other hoops that have been raised during this argument. And as the record shows, they conceded prior to trial that there were 12 available sites for relocation. And the trial court based his decision denying the motions to dismiss on that concession. There was no factual issue.
There was no parsing of the word available between technically available and actually available before the Superior Court.
If you look at the letter written by Mr. Robinson that's in the state's appendix, the language is nuanced. However, he appears to be conceding that there are 12 sites available. The word technically available, I believe, is one that has arisen on appeal. It was the trial judge's understanding that the lots were, or the sites were, physically and legally available, which is the language that he uses during the discussion during the offers conference.
Well, don't we have to consider, given the fact that the number itself, the absolute number, is a pretty small one, 12, and then. We also know that several of those locations are being used for things that are not likely to ever change in the near future, like a police barracks and a part of a mall. So is it enough to say, well, if you look at this map, we can identify certain locations that would meet the requirements of the statute, but if you wanted to make a factual determination whether it would be possible to obtain a property and build or renovate to make this kind of an establishment, that is not possible. Don't we have to be concerned about the actual possibility or the actual availability as opposed to the technical availability?
Well, I think in the first place, it's not the appellate court that is have to be concerned with the factual availability. That's something that should have been determined at the trial level.
Well, I'm not saying we would decide that, but doesn't that mean that we have to send it back?
Well, that's one possibility, but I think the fact that the appellants had conceded at the trial level when they could have put the state to its proof and contested it. I mean, the state came up with 34 sites for adult uses in Newcastle County based upon the affidavits of Mr. Bieri and Susie. I mean, there was another affidavit, apparently, of the appellant's expert, Mr. Lober. But rather than making this a contested issue of fact, then what happened was the appellant said, well, 12 is okay. 12 are available. For the purposes of the motion to dismiss, treating it as if it were a motion for summary judgment, taking the state's side, they said, although it was only in part, you know, let the state have its best shot. And the trial court ruled 12 was enough, viewing it as both these sites as physically and legally available. To come back now and say, no, they're not actually available because of these various long-term uses.
When you say legally available, has someone factored in the current zoning? Or my question really relates to a situation where to have it rezoned would be construed as a form of spot zoning, which is impermissible. So with regard to these 12 sites, are they zoned or would they have to be rezoned?
No, it's my understanding, based upon the methodology used, that they were all within the commercial regional zone, so that they were appropriately zoned, and the sites were determined based upon computer programs, which drew circles, 500-feet circles around, to create buffer zones, and 2,800-feet radii, pardon me, I'm not a mathematician, to create buffers around churches.
So, and then if they were zoned properly, we're down to the issue of price.
Basically. There was no dispute really about the methodology that I'm aware of. It had to do with whether, at this point, the argument is they can't actually access these sites because of the cost. But commercial viability of these was never a concern under the First Amendment.
Is it just cost, or is it also willingness of the current owner or occupier to sell?
Well, again, it could be that's one of the problems. They might not be willing to sell, but then to say that the government is responsible for the current landowner's reluctance to sell and that therefore the statute is unconstitutional makes no sense. That's not government restraint. That's not the government saying you will not sell to an adult business or that, a spot rezoning to preclude it. It's just that's the current landowner and everybody has to take their chances on the market, be it, commercial market or residential market.
But if the government's restrictions bring you down to such a tiny number, doesn't somebody have to take a look at whether that effectively eliminates this form of establishment from existing? And if so, hasn't the government, whether it says so in the statute or not, hasn't it in effect banned it?
Well, I think there are different ways of looking at the numbers, and some of the cases cited by appellants use this ratio of land to population or land to available sites to acreage in the general area.
And doesn't this come way off the charts and all of that?
Under that formula, it is a very small percentage, yes. But there are other methods of looking at it as well, and the method that was used by the trial judge, Your Honor, was the method of comparing the actual number of available sites to the number of businesses existing, operating, or wanting to operate in the area. And there are, besides the two legal non-conforming businesses, there is the appellant's business, and then apparently another business that's been operating without a license in Newcastle County. So 12 sites for two businesses. Is
there any court other than ours that has used that as their way of analyzing availability?
Yes, Your Honor. I cited a number of them in the different, in the argument, I think it was the Seventh Circuit and Florida, the Fifth Circuit. They're all in there. I don't have the exact page. But it's not just Delaware. And, in fact, the trial judge cited some of these other cases in his decision. This was how. He didn't dream this out of whole cloth. This was the method that he applied. And so, it comes down to what does it mean to have adequate alternative avenues of expression? Are there ways of businesses being able to provide these services or provide these venues for the sort of expressive conduct that Fantasia supplies? And if, in fact, there are available sites more than there are businesses willing to operate, then what more is needed? I mean, do we need to set aside acreage, thousands of acres in Newcastle County, just in the event that one day a business will come up and say, hey, I want those girls in pasties and,
Did you really say thousands of acres?
If you were to follow the Renton analysis, it wasn't really an analysis, but the facts that were in Renton, I can't remember the exact numbers, but I did the calculation, and you're welcome to check my arithmetic, but it would be a comparable amount of acreage in Newcastle County, would be about 11,000 acres, devoted to adult use entertainment.
The distance is about half a mile. What's your understanding of the record on how that was arrived at? And are there other cases that have dealt with similar distances?
As far as my understanding of the record, there are the, I believe it's the Amoco case and also the Huddleston case. And one referred to the other. So I believe it was the findings at the county level as to 2,800 feet, roughly a half a mile, being appropriate for a buffer zone between or distance between churches and schools, because you have children going to school, you have children and adults going to churches who would not want to be exposed to the sort of secondary effects that adult entertainment uses might have in the neighborhood, and whether they walk, which perhaps in the 70s was more likely people would walk, but also whether they were to drive or pass by. This would be something that was felt by the county council that this was an appropriate distance to shelter the children and the churchgoers from these effects. So that's my understanding of the record. As far as other jurisdictions, if you read the cases, 2,800 feet is at the extreme. A lot of them appear to be distances more in the line of 1,000 feet or 1,500 feet. But yes, there is a record of historical findings that this was appropriate in the minds of the legislature, whether it was the county executives or the General Assembly, which more or less followed that and adopted those requirements. So I think under those circumstances, there is a basis, a legislative basis, for adopting that particular number, 2,800 feet.
It is correct, whatever the constitutional argument made to us today, that the trial judge never had the opportunity to address either the facts on which the constitutional argument is made or the precise constitutional argument that's being made to us today, correct?
That's my understanding. There's no reference to the Delaware Constitution that I could find below.
And there's nothing I can find in the judge's opinion that addresses technical versus practical availability or the nature of the other sites, correct?
That's correct. I did point out, I believe, in my brief and in the appendix that there was some discussion on that day before the stipulated trial took place as to whether or not there was going to be a retraction of that concession, but it was not retracted. I mean, ultimately, in the sense that the stipulation.
Well, concession or not, the issue wasn't raised in a form where the trial judge has ruled on any of this, correct?
That's correct. That's correct, Your Honor. Basically, the question here, the only question that applies to the appellant is whether this 2,800-foot restriction is one that is unconstitutional, as they claim. And the fact of the matter is the trial judge applied, based on the facts, the conceded facts that he was given, applied a standard or a method of comparing available uses to existing operations or operations that wanted to come into business in Newcastle County, and found that there was more than enough. So that there's really no need for this court to go beyond and look beyond and decide whether it's really available, possibly available, technically available or not, because the court made the appropriate determination, applied a methodology that's been used in other courts and other circuits in this country, and based it all on his understanding of First Amendment case law, because there was no state constitutional argument or claim ever raised, and in fact, it could not have been raised initially. So although there are other states, such as New York, that have interpreted their state constitutions more broadly, more liberally than the First Amendment, there's really no basis in Delaware at this point. The appellants have cited neither the text nor any case law to support a different reading, a different interpretation of the state constitution from the First Amendment.
If the appellant had procured affidavits from the owners of these 12 properties, to the extent under penalty of perjury, I swear that I will never sell this property to an adult entertainment establishment, and then it gets notarized, would that make a difference?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because, again, it's not state action. I mean, the fact that these 12 owners of these 12 sites never want to sell doesn't mean their heirs might not want to sell.
Well, one of them is pretty unlikely. It would take an act of the General Assembly to sell the state property.
Well, if there were state action there, I might have to consider that was not a legally available site. But in the other circumstances involving private landowners, I don't think that makes a difference to the analysis in the slightest.
Well, would it make any difference if they had done a survey and they would have said, you know, at 1,500 feet, we have a great many more sites? And the real difficulty with the lack of available sites is the selection of 2,800.
If they, meaning the appellants in doing theirs, I mean, it comes down to a question of line drawing and who's making the determination of what the appropriate line is. The General Assembly made the determination that this was 2,800 feet was the distance they wanted to keep from adult entertainment uses and churches and schools. Yes, if you brought it down to 1,500 or 1,000 or 500, you'd likely find more sites.
Well, let's go the other way. Let's suppose they picked 3,000 feet. And at 3,000 feet, there were no available sites. And then the position is, well, that's unfortunate, but we think 3,000 feet is the right distance.
I think if there were no sites at 3,000 feet, then the state has not provided adequate alternative avenues of expression. There's no place, and the constitutional claim would prevail, that this is unconstitutional because the state's action in drawing the line at 3,000 feet effectively puts them out of business. So it's a question of line drawing, and the state submits that the line was drawn properly here on the basis of the fact that there are 12 available sites, which are more than the two existing, not the legally nonconforming, but the appellant and the other business that is currently operating without a license, more than they need.
Do you need any more than one to pass constitutional scrutiny?
Well, there's case law out there saying one is enough, just one more. So, I mean, that's not the question here because we have more than one, but there are cases that there is at least one case I found that said that's fine. One more than what you have in the way of existing businesses is enough. If there are no further questions from the court.
You make your case is at 101 FRD 472, Your Honor.
How do you respond to the argument made by opposing counsel that basically you conceded the question of availability and did not raise below whether there was actual availability versus technical availability, and therefore that's not an issue before us?
The Loeber affidavit in the materials, as far as in the appendix, I think starting at the opening appendix at around page 40, contradicts that. The whole point was, yes, technically there's 12 sites. If you want to look at where the circles go and what have you, we can't argue that fact. I can't argue the fact that the girls were wearing pasties with a piece of tape straight down underneath the sink. Those facts weren't anything that we could argue. The fact is simply whether or not, if we're going to look at the case law as far as cited by my opponent, the NW Enterprises case, whether or not the buffer zones that have been selected whether the regulation leaves available sufficient alternative sites for the protected speech. That's the question.
But what I'm getting at is that if the trial court was told, we agree there are 12 alternative sites available, and there was no argument made and no evidence presented about how readily or actually available those sites are, then why is that an issue?
The Lover affidavit was presented to the trial court. It is true at the trial court level we were arguing the fact that there was only 8/10,000ths of a percentage of acreage there as our principal argument, and we're surprised that Judge Tolliver decided to use redistricting case analysis to say that as long as there's one more than is currently being applied for, it's okay. That's not what Renton stands for. That's not what the redistricting cases stand for. In fact, if you take a look at the NW Enterprises case that Judge Tolliver cites, it sits there and says there's afforded at least 1,362 actual conforming sexually oriented business sites and 183 sites that can be operated consistently with the minimum distance between adult uses. We're not dealing with a situation where there was a real problem. It was a scenario where, okay, if you don't have one here, you can go across the street and open one. We don't have that here. This isn't a redistricting case, and that's why Judge Tolliver's analysis is totally wrong. Applying rational basis to a fundamental situation is totally wrong. You have to use a rent analysis as far as federal. We'll look at federal. You have to use a rent analysis. Judge Tolliver uses rational basis in a fundamental rights case. We're taking a look at a matter of vagueness. The circumstances regarding what I mentioned before, pasty and a piece of tape underneath. He cites Del Percio, City of Dayton versus Del Percio. The lower court, the district court in Del Percio, specifically said, this is vague. Judge Sharp said, well, we can read it if you just put a piece of tape right underneath that we can save the statute. We argued to Judge Tolliver, this same language is vague. He says, oh, no, Del Percio allows it. Del Percio allowed it by saying, oh, this is the 21st Amendment concern, and we can get around the First Amendment situation. That's not the case here. That's how Judge Tolliver escaped the analysis in Clarkson that sets forth the fact that you have to apply Renton herein to show that there's adequate basis and that this statute is narrowly tailored.
So you're saying, bottom line, that you presented factual evidence that while these sites may have been technically available, they were not practically available and not available in any real sense, and that argument was made to Judge Tolliver and he either ignored it or misconstrued it, because no discussion of it ever appears in any of his writings.
You're right, it doesn't. Again, the principal argument, although the Lober affidavit was presented as part of our opening briefs before the Superior Court, was also presented when the matter was in the federal court before the statute
okay,
was placed.
The evidence contained in the Lober affidavit was before Judge Tolliver.
Yes, sure.
My question is, was the argument that you made to us today that technically available and reasonably or practically available was an argument made to Judge Tolliver, and he simply missed the point?
That's my recollection of it, Your Honor, along with the fact that the that we were arguing again the percentages as far as being totally unavailable. That's my recollection, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Take the case under advisement.
Please rise.